Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. Thank you for listening to this podcast of Real Recovery. There are many more podcasts available at myfaithradio.com. Your support makes this possible. Thank you.
You're listening to an encore presentation of Real Recovery.
Welcome to Real Recovery. So glad that you're joining us because we've got a wonderful show for you. Bill Arnold on this side of the studio and just across the way, George P. Fraser. Hello, George.
Billy, how are you?
Good. George, when you play golf and you're trying to estimate the distance to the green, do you kind of ever hold your thumb up and then try to estimate your distance to the green, or do you never do that?
Well, a lot of times I try to find the ball first, and that can be a real problem.
Yeah. What about, do you throw grass up in the air to see where the wind's blowing?
Well, usually you can feel that.
Uh-huh.
I wish I was good enough, like the pros, where a difference of 5 yards would make a difference.
Yeah, but you're not that good, are you?
Not that good.
Yeah. I'm always curious about your golf game because you spend a lot of time, and I never hear you improving.
I mean, it got worse.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It got worse.
As you get older, that's a good measurement. Like, I'm thinking driving home from the course yesterday.
Yeah.
I really shouldn't be driving the car. You know, that's how bad it is. But it's fun. I would rather work out as you do. I don't get high from playing golf. And we talk about that, Bill, as we roll into the steps. And, of course, we do the steps on this show, not because we worship at the altar of AA, but they help us walk out our faith. And when we think about golf, I'm powerless over my golf game.
Yes, you are.
And step one is we admitted we were powerless over drugs, alcohol, and our life was unmanageable. And, Bill, I can use that in a lot of areas of my Christian walk. My anger, my lust, my greed, my laziness. I've been reading a lot about sloth lately. And what that is for me, Bill, and I know you are a workout, watch what you eat, get up early guy. I started sleeping in the winter because I would stay up and stream TV shows. And I was working with a friend of mine named Tony, and Tony said, yeah, I get up at 5 every day and read the Bible. And I'm thinking, I used to do that before I got sick, and I used that as an excuse for 7 years. I think we need to be large and in charge of our life and get out of the comfort.
Yeah.
And when you get up and you get right into the Word, I feel more in charge of my day.
Uh-huh.
And when you get enough sleep, eat right, and work out as we do, we're really in a spiritual warfare. And a lot of the guys that I work with downplay it. I know I certainly did. I remember a book I read a long time ago, The Battle for Your Mind, way back in college. And it talked about what you put in, garbage out.
Yeah.
And I think, Bill, if we're in recovery, most guys that we work with don't make it. And I think a lot of the reason is they underestimate what it takes to stay sober.
Mm-hmm.
God has really given us a gift to allow us to go our own way, to get our attention. You got to try at this. You have to do this every day. You have to pick up your cross and deny yourself daily. Apart from me, you can do nothing. And we have that similar theme all the time on this show. And I think one of the things that we don't do well enough on this show, I think we do everything pretty high level, Bill. Come on, we got to be honest, how hard it is to make changes.
Mm-hmm. Now, speaking of changes, I was speaking to a group last week, George, as you know, I do Friday nights. And I had mentioned something that I had heard from fairly well-known psychologists right now. And he said, if you want to learn something about yourself, here's what you do. You sit on the end of your bed one night. And you say to yourself, what am I doing wrong that I know I'm doing wrong? And then you ask yourself, is it something I would change or could change? And if the answer is yes, then you have to pray for the answer. And he said, when the answer comes, he goes, I promise you're not going to like the answer. But it's the necessary step you need to take to make a difference. And I think, George, you've said that before, where you're asking people, what's the one thing you're not willing to do? That's probably the thing you need to do the most.
Totally. And one of the things you've really helped me with in my walk, all joking aside, you asked me one day, why don't you ever talk about holiness? Well, now that I reflect on that, that would be me, like me talking about mental health. You know, it's And I kind of had plateaued in my walk when I thought about it. You know, I'm good enough. And I think Paul talks about in the Bible pressing on towards the goal. Constant and never-ending improvement, Bill. And I like that, sitting on the end of the bed. When I'm in bed at night and ready to call it a day, I always reflect back on my day. What could I have done better? What did God help me to do? Am I sober? But that thing about, where could I improve? And I think the longer you go on a recovery, it's not about the sins of commission. It's the sins of omission. You taught me a long time ago that if God is sovereign, everybody you meet is a godly appointment.
Mm-hmm.
And did I, you know, blow some people off because they got in the my way of my agenda, what I wanted to do? Yeah. And what could you have done? So I like that. What was his conclusion for us to get into gear and take the action steps we need to do?
Well, he said, if you want to learn something about yourself, it requires being honest. No messing around. And so you ask yourself, what am I doing wrong that I know I'm doing wrong? So that's step one. I mean, it's not step one in the program, but it's the first thing he asked people to do. And then he said, after you've determined what that is it something that you should change and would change? So you have to be willing to say, yes, I do want to change this. And then he said, pray for the answer. And he said, the answer will come. And when it comes, you're not going to like the answer.
For me, what I need to do, that's so good. I also have to pray for the desire to change. I pray for the power, strength, and desire to stay sober every day. Because I'll tell you what, I don't want to do this. And I look at the book of James, and it says, you don't have because you don't ask. But I love that reflection. Have you been doing that?
I just saw it a week ago, so I've been kind of working on it
myself. Well, you're busy.
I'm busy, you know. And so, no, I haven't done it yet, but I am going to do it. So it's good practice. So, George, let's look a little bit at step three. We made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. So it sounds like in step three, you're trying to open the door to, for a long time, this door has been closed and locked.
Yes. So, and what I'm doing is driving a stake. I'm making a decision to turn my will and my life. And one of the things that I did was, okay, I'll turn my drinking and my drug use over to God. Yeah, that's good. But I'm going to hold on to my gambling, my dating activities. Yeah, you know, I don't want to, I deserve those things. It says your life. The implication is your whole life. And as we, you know, grow in walking with the Lord, we see that there are certain things we hold on to that we can't go, well, you know, I'm doing the other stuff. This is a constant battle, Bill. And I keep going back to the Bible all the time because that's the only truth I have. Satan roars around like a lion looking for somebody to devour. Peter wrote that. And the other one that comes is pride comes before the fall. Let every man take heed lest he stumble. I don't stumble. I crash.
Mm.
I kiss concrete. And what that says to me, Bill, is when I think I'm doing okay, I need to look at that. God enabled us to get sober. He puts the desire in our heart. We wrote over together, Nate and I did, and we were talking about getting sober. And I don't think anybody gets sober without God convicting them and offering them the hope that all of a sudden this seems like a good idea to you, whereas before everybody in your life knew it would be a good idea, but you weren't willing to do it. Even people, Bill, that don't acknowledge God, they take credit for it themselves.
Mm-hmm.
I decided this. No, you didn't. And my favorite one, and I did this, I might drink too much, I might do too many drugs, I might gamble too much. But you know what? I'm a pretty honest guy. Well, if you're doing all that stuff, that's a self-refuting comment. I have a lot of guys tell me they're alcoholic, but they're a good dad. And a friend of mine, Jimmy T, taught me, and he said this about himself, if you're an alcoholic, you're not a good dad, you're not a good worker, and you're not being a good person. Because what you said that the psychologist said,
mm-hmm.
there's a part of scripture, and I don't have the address, blessed is the man who does not condemn anything he does. That's what that psychologist is talking about. The Holy Spirit convicts us, and I think we have a choice on what we do with that, Bill. Mm-hmm. Really helpful.
Yeah. So step three, George, it seems like it's an action step, and you have to take action. So as we connect it back to this psychologist that said, get real with yourself. You know, what am I doing wrong? And I know I'm doing wrong. And it's something I could change and I would change. When you get to that point, you're saying, I would change it. Now you're at a point of honesty. Then you just say, help me, God, to make that change. And then when the answer comes, it's going to be something you don't like. But there's your step. So we'll take a break. We'll come back. Bring on Nate, our special guest. You're listening to Real Recovery with Bill and George. Nate's at the board.
Ryan.
I'm sorry.
They kind of look alike, you know. They both look like they're first 2 years of college.
I know. They are very youthful. Yeah. Nate's our guest. Ryan's at the board. I'm talking too fast today, George.
No, that's my problem. You're doing
great. No, but
I'm talking. The psychology stuff was fabulous.
I thought it was good.
So what you're doing wrong is getting people's names wrong.
Yeah, that's all. That's all. So let me take a deep breath, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to an encore presentation of Real Recovery.
Welcome back to Real Recovery. And boy, we've got a great show tonight, George. And I know you know our guest, Nate, and we're going to bring him onto the show, time permitting. I think we had a good start.
Yeah, we
I'm
do.
I'm not saying we didn't have a good start. I thought we did well. And we could continue, or we could bring Nate on.
Well, call. It's always interesting to us.
That's true.
You know.
That's true.
Now, Nate, I had a front row seat for a lot of this. And
for a lot of Nate?
Yeah.
Okay.
And real proud of what God's done in his life. And where we pick up the cross and deny ourselves, I'm not always sure, Bill, but I know it doesn't happen without God starting the process. So, Nate, thanks for doing this. Welcome to the show.
Yeah. Thanks, George. Glad to be here.
What about thanks, Bill?
Bill, yeah.
Thanks, Bill.
Yeah, I mean, just so you know, there's two of us here hosting the show.
Got your name wrong a couple minutes ago. And then Ryan asked you how you spell it.
Yeah.
How do you spell Bill, Ryan?
Oh, you really think I'm going to get that one wrong?
Do yeah,
I need
you
to
better
do this.
Yeah.
B-I-L-L.
Ah, perfect. Well done.
Yeah.
Well done.
Another
Ryan.
Tribute to the college we work at. Hey.
Yeah. All right, now let's not get too far off track. We've got a very important show tonight with a very special guest.
I'm real stuck on what I need to work on, so we'll try to move forward.
All right.
So where'd you grow up?
Well, I was born in Michigan and then moved to Indiana in about fifth grade. And that's where I basically grew up. Middle school and high school, and spent most of my life there.
And your family, churchgoers, did you go to church?
Yeah, we were very regular at church. You know, we went at least three times a week.
Whoa.
Sunday mornings, Sunday nights, Wednesday nights.
That's a lot of church.
It was. We were very involved. It's just kind of a part of what our family did, and that's where all of our family friends were from and everything. Just all of our connections were basically through church.
Did you ever think as a kid, hey, maybe once a week would cover this, or were you into it?
You know, I was into it just because that's where all my friends were. So, you know, every time we went to church, it was just another chance to hang out with my friends.
And nice.
So, yeah.
Nice.
Did your family pray together? And
we did. Yeah, we prayed regularly. You know, I remember doing like devotions, and my dad would read to us almost every night before bed. And we would, you know, when I was little, we would even act it out a lot of times. He'd read a story, and me and my brothers would just kind of act out the story and, prayed. And
boy, what a good way to remember the story.
Yeah, it was. It definitely helped us get involved in it and made it kind of just come to life for us.
Yeah. How many in the family, brothers and sisters?
I have two brothers and one sister.
Okay. So I like that. And you had a family that was church oriented. So you were hearing about God, hearing about Jesus, hearing about commitment, I would guess.
Yeah.
Faith decision, I would guess.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. I basically, from a young age, confessed faith in the Lord and believed. And so was a big part of my life growing up, too.
All right. Do we need to continue this interview anymore, George, or are we done?
Ask him if he ever sat on the edge of his bed and wondered what he needed to change. No, I'm
not guessing he did anything wrong in his life.
Well, we're going to get back to this because this is really important.
Okay.
With how it comes out. Were you playing any sports? Were you getting good grades?
Yeah, I played soccer pretty much my entire life. In high school, I ran track as well, but soccer was pretty much the one sport that I was regularly involved in and pretty good at. So,
kind of grades? Were you straight A's?
No, not straight A's. You know, B's and A's. I had to work for it. Didn't necessarily come supernatural, but I did fairly well in school.
Mm-hmm. So what was the friend? Did you have friends in high school? Was there peer pressure? Were you part of the cool group, the not so cool group? Was there any bullying that went on? Was there a nice connection with friends? What was your friend situation like in high school?
I had a lot of groups of friends, I think, I would say. In high school, I went to a Christian school in Indiana, and I kind of started to follow into the wrong crowd, I would say, kind of in the middle of high school. And that's where, it was like the cool crowd, the cool group. You know, we did a lot of stuff together, and that's kind of where I started to get influenced to do things, you know, I probably shouldn't have been doing at the time, including, you know, starting to drink and smoke and all those kinds of things.
How did you get into your home after an evening of drinking and smoking without your parents going, "Hey, Nate, you don't smell right or look right"?
Well, a lot of times we would just like stay over at friends' houses.
Okay.
Or, you know, do it when my parents went to sleep. We'd have friends over and then just, you know, throw a party after that or something.
Yeah, see, Bill never did that, so he doesn't.
So I don't. I got to ask
you.
You
wait till you go to bed, or you don't come home.
Yeah, just don't come home.
So when you say smoke cigarettes, or were you smoking pot?
Well, yeah, it definitely started with cigarettes, and then went to pot. I actually smoked weed before I ever drank, actually, and then I almost didn't like it though. But then once I drank, that was kind of what I fell in love with. I loved that, and I didn't have to worry about, you know, drug tests and all of that. So,
but you're in high school, Nate. So how much can you love alcohol, and how do you get it, and how do you make that happen? It's just a question I don't know, because I'm a little naive.
Yeah. So, my friends, you know, they had older siblings, so they would be able to get it that way.
Okay.
And I actually really didn't even start drinking until about the end of my senior year. I was a pretty clean cut kid most of the way through, you know, and then. About the middle, that's when I started to kind of, the middle of high school, started to, you know, start to experiment with cigarettes and then eventually weed and then started drinking close to the end. So,
do you remember the first time you got the feeling?
From drinking?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It once I drank, it was instant love of that buzz and that feeling.
You know, you look at him, it's shocking. He looks like he should be riding bikes with another guy dropping off copies at the Watchman going door to door. I told him when I first met him, don't hang around us because you're too normal. It can happen to anybody. And what's going to become important is how he was raised later. And it talks about in the Bible, bring them up in the way of the Lord and they will come back. And that's really prophetic. So you're looking at schools. What did you want to do? Where'd you want to go?
I wanted to be in the Navy, actually, and that was kind of my dream ever since I was little. So that was part of why I kept away from it maybe for a while, at least, from drugs and alcohol, just because I knew I wanted to go into the Navy. And so I was looking at the Naval Academy, and that was kind of my dream. And then I got on the wait list there, and then I would eventually ended up doing NROTC at Miami University, which is where I started college.
In Ohio?
Yes. Yep.
What's NROTC?
It's Naval Reserve Officer Candidate School, something like that.
Did you do that, Bill?
No, George, and you clearly wouldn't know about that.
That's why I asked. Yeah.
Yeah.
Were you disappointed not going to there?
I was. Initially, I was pretty bummed out, and that's kind of when it started to escalate my drinking and stuff because I was kind of like, well, you know what? I didn't get what my dream wanted, so, you know, I guess I'll go experiment more with drugs and alcohol. So,
how often were you drinking? What kind of quantities?
At first, it started out just on the weekends for fun, but it progressed pretty rapidly. And it was, from the get-go, pretty much I was a binge drinker, and I didn't really have an off switch. So from the first drink, I would just kind of just keep going and going and going until I kept trying to get that feeling and almost would black out pretty regularly.
Pretty shocking, very quick. And yeah. This is all before we went to college?
No, this was in college.
In college, okay. And where did you go?
Miami of Ohio.
Okay.
Is where I started there. And I remember when my parents basically dropped me off and they left that day and went. There was some big party, and that's kind of one of the first times I think I actually blacked out. But it was, you know, basically once they dropped me off there at the school, and it was pretty much, you know, Nate's here by himself. He can do whatever he want. And
hey-o.
Yeah.
Sorry, I asked you before where you went, but I know you went to Taylor University. So I'm guessing, did things change at Miami for you?
It did. I went there for 3 years and ended up dropping out of the Navy ROTC and then started to get in some legal trouble and the grades started to slip and ended up having to drop out of college, actually. And then that's when I ended up going to rehab here in Minnesota.
So the legal trouble, you get some parking tickets or what happened?
No, I started getting some DUI and public intoxication and started picking up different charges for initially minor drinking too. So yeah, they kind of started adding up.
Did you know that you had a problem?
No, honestly, I just would blame it on a bad night or, you know, just
bad
drinking
luck
too much.
Circumstances,
yep.
Sure.
Wrong place, wrong time.
It's amazing how that happens, Bill. The luck turns on you. How were your grades?
They were okay at first. You know, I definitely had to work for it, but I definitely struggled near the end as the drinking progressed, and that's, you know, what ultimately one of the reasons that kind of led to needing to go to rehab was just the grades were suffering and just needed to try and get some help.
Was it hard for you to keep that from your parents, the lies and the lifestyle change?
It was, but it also wasn't, because in college, you know, I didn't talk to them much. I was living, you know, 2 hours away. They weren't around, so it was pretty easy for me to hide it, you know, until I started getting in legal trouble, and that's when, you know, obviously they started to catch on and see that things weren't adding up.
All right. Nate, off to a good start. This is fascinating. And when the police lights go on behind you, that must be a horrifying feeling when you know that you've probably had too much to drink and the consequences could be horrible.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we'll hear more about that. I'm excited to hear the height of the after. You are listening to Real Recovery with Bill and George. If you are new to the program, where have you been? We've been missing you. You can learn more about us at myfaithradio.com. We'll be right back.
You're listening to an encore presentation of Real Recovery.
All right, we weren't gone long, and I'm glad that we're back with our special guest, Nate, because, George, the story is heating up, and we're going to get into how difficult and challenging recovery can be.
Yes.
You've got to sit on the edge of your bed and get real with yourself and say, what am I doing wrong? And I know I'm doing it wrong, and I could change, and I would change. That's step something.
I think you'd do that when you're sitting in the back of the car cuffed. That's a good opportunity to do that.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's real easy, too, when you feel so helpless there, you know, in a cop car or sitting in jail. It's easy to think, well, yep, this is crazy, out of control. But
Did you talk to God? You go, hey, it's me, Nate. Help.
Yeah, that's really a lot of the only times I talked to God in those days. You know, I didn't have a regular relationship with him. And so a lot of times the only times I would pray was when I needed something from him. And that was mainly to help get me out of trouble that I got myself into.
I like that. Very good honesty. So you go to rehab.
Yep. Decided with the help of my parents and some mentors in my life at that time, they had kind of helped me see that I needed to make a change because my parents basically kicked me out of the house, but they offered to help get me to Minnesota to rehab. And that's where I initially didn't want to go, but ended up going to Redemption House. And that was back in 2016, the first time I went through.
Now that's a Christian rehab.
It is, yep. And I had tried a secular one. It was in Indiana, and it was a really small stint that I did. And it was basically just to look good for court and try and get my family and parents off my back. But yeah, Redemption House was a faith-based rehab here in Minnesota that I went to.
Once again, Bill, the Department of Corrections is the greatest evangelical tool in the nation. And you can't lie to those guys and smooth them over. You can't do that.
No.
So what was it like at Redemption House?
I loved it. It was the first time that I really had a chance to kind of look at myself and in recovery. You know, I had, you know, heard about AA and things like that, but it was the first time that I really did some actually like Christian counseling and talked about, you know, what I went through and what I was dealing with and seeing that, you know, I had an issue with drinking and drugs and that I couldn't do it on my own.
So you graduated?
Yep. Yep. Eventually, I went to Redemption House for the first time and then decided I wanted to go back and finish my degree. And that's when I transferred to Taylor University and had 2 years there and ended up graduating. And once I graduated, I moved out to Minnesota and got an engineering job out here.
And how did that go? Everything was wonderful.
Yeah, it was good. It was really good. I was doing pretty well. I had, at that time, probably, you know, I had a few slip-ups here and there over the years.
What's a slip-up?
You know, where I would relapse. I drank and ended up, you know, basically just relapsing. I think one other time in there, I went to Redemption House again in between graduation and in the first time there. But
so when you got out of Redemption House and you're doing well, you're going to church, you're in the Word. Were you doing that when you went back to drinking?
No. So I had gotten away from it. You know, I did things for a while, but I eventually, you know, kind of, I got this from here. And
God, I'll take it from here.
Yep, exactly.
Okay. I know that.
That's a strategy.
I know that one.
That doesn't
sure.
work very well.
No, but, you know, you've gotten what you need, and you're good. Good to go. And,
yep.
And you miss drinking.
I did. You know, there's a lot to love about it. As destructive as it was, it still kind of had that allure at times of, you know, I think I can do it this time, or, you know, would still revert back to that thinking of that was just a bad night when I got in trouble. And, you know, maybe this time it will be a little different.
You got a new plan for doing it differently, don't you?
Yep.
And that's energized you, hasn't it?
Yeah.
As ridiculous as that is.
Well, at the time, it seems like a good idea.
No, I know, but
yeah,
looking at the whole picture, it's ridiculous.
Well, we're going to hear what happened.
Okay, let's hear about it then.
Yeah. So how well did that work for you?
It honestly, it worked okay for a little bit. I was able to, quote unquote, control it, I thought, for some time. But, you know, like everything, it caught up to me, and everything eventually crashed and burned. You know, I hit it for about a year and a half or so of continuing to relapse and drink, and just kept thinking, okay, well, you know, if I can just get a month sober, you know, then I'll be fine, and then I can maybe tell people that I slipped up and kind of minimize it. But I just could never quite get to where I wanted to be. I thought I had to kind of clean myself up in front of my family and friends, and in front of God too. You know, I just thought, you know, if I can just clean myself up and do the work myself, then I can maybe ask for help eventually.
Sounds like a plan. The problem, of course, is we're being dishonest at that time. And we have to live in the truth and act upon the truth. So how did this finally crash and burn for you?
So in the midst of that, I ended up getting married, and I was still working. And, you know, I looked like I was holding everything together. But my wife, she caught me a couple times, and this was near the end of that. You know, when I was hiding it for about a year and a half, I just... She ended up, you know, coming up and finding out that I was drinking, and then she got on and found my credit card statements, and then, she, you know, she was looking back, and she just saw months and months and months back of charges from liquor stores of where I had just been lying and deceiving her and doing it literally right under her nose, and she didn't have any idea. You know, she had her suspicions, but she didn't have that proof until she saw kind of that, the record of everything. And so she confronted me on that, and I kind of broke and told her, yep, you know, I've been struggling for a while here and hiding it. And she told me to get help and to, you know, talk to the guys at Redemption House and talk to George. And I told her I would, but I didn't. So I, again, just kind of thought I could do this on my own, and I'll just kind of clean up my act. But once she caught me that time, I did end up relapsing again in there, and that was kind of the last straw, where she basically told me that she was done. She's going to leave me, and I just need to get help. So she did. She gave me about 5 minutes to pack a bag, and I packed all I could in those 5 minutes, and she took me back over to Redemption House and dropped me off on the porch. And I walked in, still drunk at the time, and had no idea, you know, what the future was going to look like in the coming months or years. So,
were you scared?
I was. I was terrified. You know, I'd been thinking I could, you know, if I could just kind of clean up a little bit, you know, I would be able to control everything. And, you know, I had everything in front of me, handed to me, kind of, you know, I had a wife and a job and a career, and but I still couldn't stop the drinking because of all that.
I'm reminded of the verse in James where it talks about a double-minded man is unstable and all he does, tossed about like waves on the ocean. So you've got a lot of lying going on. You're one way around the house, you're one way around church, you're one way around your Redemption House guys and at work, and then you got your secret.
Yeah.
And that eats you away, doesn't it?
It does. It was very exhausting and tiring, and just ultimately hard to hide. Like, I'm surprised I honestly lasted that long hiding all of that and didn't get in trouble more. And, you know, I praise God that I didn't get in more legal trouble in that year and a half or so that I was stuck in my patterns of drinking and relapsing. But ultimately it did catch up to me, and it was just exhausting trying to hide and, you know, remember what I did the night before, what I said, and making sure, you know, I hid all of the evidence, and just so exhausting.
My prayer for you is that you'll always remember how you felt walking through that door. When we think about drinking, Bill, we compare the worst times of recovery, or we wouldn't be thinking about it, to the best times of using. And if you remember what it was like, how bad the shame was and the guilt and how lost you are, you won't go back. You want to be in reality. So you humbled yourself with help from family members to go back in.
Yep.
What happened then?
So she dropped me off, and initially I was still like, how can I not go back? How can I keep myself, you know, from going back into Redemption House, which is usually a 3-month program where you're inpatient there. And, you know, I was like, I can't afford this. I have to work. You know, we had just had our son. He was 3 months old when she dropped me off. Or sorry, 3 weeks old. And, you know, I had a family to provide for. I thought, you know, how am I ever going to get through this? You know, I had thoughts of, you know, just ending my life at that time. I felt completely hopeless and couldn't see how anything good could come out of it. But I did decide eventually to, you know, stay at Redemption House. I didn't know what was going to happen, how I would provide, you know, if I would even keep my job. But I did. I tried to humble myself as best I could, and eventually the Lord did provide, and I was able to keep my job and stayed at Redemption House there. I went through 3 months at the program, and within those 3 months, you know, my wife and I, we continued to talk, but we didn't know what the future looked like in that. But she wasn't going to come back home. She had some family in another state that she went away to get help with our son, who, you know, at the time was a month old or so. So after I completed the 3 months there, I ended up coming on staff at Redemption House there and basically helping as the house manager, because at the time they didn't have a house manager. It was basically just John and Justin running the program there. And so since I didn't want to move home by myself, which I knew would probably lead to another relapse, just living alone, I decided...
Probably?
Yeah, most definitely.
Okay, no, I just...
Yeah, I mean, and that's a lot of times I would struggle, as if my wife would go out of town or something. And, you know, with us not being together and her being away, I knew, you know, if I did move back home, I would relapse. So I came on at Redemption House, kind of volunteered, helped out there. They let me stay, and I helped drive the van with the guys. And it was really, really good for me to just continue to stay there and help out.
You know, it's so impressive. Here's a guy who's lost everything. It's awful. And I go in and I don't know if I want to do this. I'm going to do it the way I do it. And somehow God convinced you, no, you're going to do it the way I tell you.
Yep.
He gets out. The job lets him have 3 months to go to rehab.
Yeah.
How long had you been working there? 2 years?
I had been there almost three.
What, that, amazing. So God's in there. They yep. let you back in. You humble yourself. You go back in. You work all day. And then your resident manager. Here's the point. I'm trying at this. Mm-hmm. I'm in this deal. I watched that. You suited up and showed up. And what a turnaround. But we always look at how you're doing. Look at what you're doing. And if you're struggling listening to this, we all struggle at a certain point. Dust yourself off. Ask God for forgiveness. Ask for the power, strength, and desire to change it. And take the action.
Mm-hmm. I'm just stuck in this image, Nate. And I appreciate your vulnerability and your candidness, because you are being dropped off for treatment. Would that be the third time?
Yep, the third time there.
And your wife is taking you there. You've got a three-week-old baby at home, and you arrive at treatment for the third time a little drunk.
Yeah.
That's an incredible picture of out of control, I need help.
How bad do you think he felt?
Probably bad. Yeah. But we could ask him, but...
Oh, well, how bad did you feel?
Boy, it was bad. I mean, like I mentioned, I had thought about ending my life that night when she was going to drop me off, and I just had no hope really in that moment.
Hmm. Well, let's hear more about what Nate is up to now. We'll take a break, come back. You're listening to Real Recovery, Bill and George. We'll be right back.
Thank you. You're listening to an encore presentation of Real Recovery.
So glad to be having Nate as our guest tonight on Real Recovery. Bill and George with you as the two hosts of Real Recovery. Two guys that love to hear stories of redemption. And George, Nate's story is powerful. And I think during the break we were talking about how he had a hard time grasping the step one, how he has to realize that he is powerless over this.
Well, I think when your wife drives you to rehab for the third time, you have a three-week-old son, you have a job, it's real hard to go, hey, I'm okay, I just need to finagle this. And he talked about ending it all. And God intervened. You didn't. You went in, you graduated, and you're working all day as an engineer, and you go back at night and you're the house manager, and your wife is in another state with your son, but you kept going, and you did everything they asked you to do and more. Why did you do that?
I did it because it was really the only thing that I could do at that time. You know, I guess there was other things I could do, but I knew at that point that it would result in me relapsing, me dying, or, you know, me killing myself or something along those lines. I knew the result would not be good. So I basically did the only thing that I knew could potentially help me, and that was just continue to humble myself and just do what was asked of me. And, you know, when they asked me to help stay and be the house manager, well, you know, I continue to work on things with my wife. I said, okay, and I'll just see what one day at a time takes. And that's kind of what I did, was just kind of take it one day, one week at a time. Eventually, you know, it started to get better and easier. But
what did your, we always look at, don't tell me, show me. What did your recovery week look like? How were you walking out your faith?
So a huge part of it for me is just the daily communion and devotion with the Lord. And that's how I really like to start my mornings. And when I had done, you know, when I had some times of sobriety and done well in the past, my usual routine had revolved around some kind of devotion in the morning and prayer, as well as, you know, being involved in some kind of group or Bible study or something along those lines. So at that time, when I was in Redemption House, it was basically the same thing. Morning devotions were a huge part of it for me and still are. And then there was groups that I would go to. Every Monday night, we had a group at Redemption House that meets, and a lot of the alumni come back out, and we have a meal together, and we fellowship, and it was just a time to connect with in small groups. And then, you know, another big part was AA. I would go to a Wednesday morning men's meeting with George, and that just helped immensely too, with just making more connections and just expanding my recovery as well.
Going to church?
Yes, that was another huge piece too. You know, church on Sundays is another big factor, and along with that is kind of the small groups. Like, ended up joining a small group within the church too. So really, really involved in a lot of different things. And I think that's one of the keys for me, was just having different groups and different aspects of, you know, church and recovery and AA, and just having all of them help kind of build into one thing that I did every week. So
yeah, we always talk about, Bill, that you don't work a recovery program or you don't work Christianity. You live it. And if you want to look at it, look at what you're doing. What time could you use? So here you got a guy who graduates from the program, Bill. What does he do? He goes back as the manager of the house, and he's working with other guys. He's got 3 months sobriety. He's working with other guys.
It's a big deal.
It's a huge deal. He's in, goes there on Monday nights for card playing, a meal, hanging out with the guys. He has community. Bill, mm-hmm. You always talk about community. I can have a community that hurts me or helps me. And he's doing all the things. And if you want to, if you're struggling, what he talked about, I think, is the pattern for most of us when we struggle. I stopped doing what I was doing, and I quit adding to it. And what could you do for other people? If you're sitting on the end of the bed, like the psychologists say, and you're like, what could you do for other people? Are there people out there? Because God doesn't get you sober and saved without having a job for you. And you're checking all those boxes.
Yeah. Again, it's what you should do and what you could do and what you would do. And it sounds like you were at that point, Nate, where you're saying, I do want to make the changes, and it's going to be one step at a time, one day at a time.
Yeah, it was. And I think that's one of the big things, too, is, like George said, just helping other people. I had never really done that. And I wouldn't even say, looking back, that, you know, I did help at Redemption House, but, like, to me, it wasn't helping. It was more just, like, helping myself. I know, you know, I was helping other guys, driving them around, talking with them and all of that, but it's one of the main things, I think, that really helped me more than it maybe helped other guys. At least that's the way I see it.
I think a big shout-out has to go to your parents, too. And when we look back on this, I met your dad. Cool guy. I don't like the fact he's so much younger than I am, but we'll go by that. that you were raised right, that you knew where to go when you were in help. And if you're a parent listening, it's a tough deal. What you really can do for your kids is pray and hold them accountable. And that's what your parents did, and they brought you up in the way of the Lord. And when you got older, you returned to it. Mm-hmm. And one of the keys that he said, Bill, for me, that really resonates with me, I didn't do this till I thought I was going to die if I didn't.
Yep.
And I don't think you have to get that far. I don't think you quit unless you lose something you're not willing to lose, or you're not going to get something that you feel you have to have. But God intervenes both ways, and I look at what guys do, and I look at you, Nate. I'm super proud of you. You're a great guy. You got a lot of game. You're going to help a lot of people, and that's why God allowed this, and you're doing it. It's really cool to see. There's nothing better.
I agree, George. And, Nate, I know that you've probably got some encouragement for someone listening that's hearing your story and hearing the predicament you were in, going to recovery for the third time, being dropped off by your wife, who was probably not very happy with you. And they're probably in a situation right now where they're thinking, how am I gonna take the next step? What advice would you have for them?
I would say, you know, don't try to do it yourself. You know, ask for help. That's one of the things that ever since I went into Redemption House that third time, what Justin, the counselor, challenged me, you know, was like, when have you ever asked for help? And the answer was never. I had never humbled myself to ask for help until it was really too late. So, you know, for anybody out there struggling or, you know, unsure, you know, you don't have to clean yourself up. You don't have to get to a certain place in your walk with the Lord or your recovery or whatever. You can come at any time and ask for help from the Lord or anybody.
I love that. That's a powerful message, and I'm encouraged that you were able to stay the course, and the third time through, you found peace and sobriety, and you're walking your faith out and staying connected in community, and I always think that's one of the big keys to staying sober and strong, George. You do that beautifully.
It's the willingness, like willing to take a couple hours out of your day to do real recovery.
Yeah.
That's
why we call it real recovery, George.
It is real, Bill.
Yeah, it is. So thank you so much, Nate. You've been a delight to meet, and we're so happy that God is doing in your life so much powerful work, and you are responding to the ways in which he has called you to live your life going forward.
Yeah, glad I could come on here, and thank you, Bill. Thank you, George.
Yeah. Well, that's our show for the night. Thank you again for tuning in to Real Recovery. We love having you. Have a great week, and we'll see you next time. Thanks for listening. Programming like this is made available through your support. Information available at myfaithradio.com.